Good evening, this is K2 Bravo Alpha Romeo, the amateur radio station of the Bergen Amateur Radio Association. This is the TechNet. Any station with emergency or priority traffic, please call at this time, K2BAR. Okay, good evening. This is, as I said, K2 Bravo Alpha Romeo. That control is Whiskey 2 Tango 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 Gordon, and we welcome you to this net. It is a weekly net conducted on the Bergen County FM Association 14679 repeater in Paramus, New Jersey. That repeater is located on top of a hospital center and is one of several repeaters, including 443-100 and 444-100. That the Bergen County FM Association operates. We encourage all members of the repeater, of BARA and users of the repeater to support the repeater association. You need not be a member of the Bergen County FM Association or the Bergen Amateur Radio Association, for that matter, to participate in this net. The purpose of this net is to discuss subjects technical in amateur radio. By definition, all subjects in amateur radio are deemed technical because of the nature of our hobby. So it's fair game to ask any question you might have on your mind. We welcome you. And again, you need not be a member. The format of this net is pretty straightforward. It basically involves coming in with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment. This is a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful opportunity, if you will, to learn new things, even about subjects we all think we know a lot about. It's amazing how we all seem to learn something each and every week, even when we come in with no topics. It's kind of neat. So, on that pleasant note, I would like to invite stations with a November call to call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment.
K2BAR, this is
Antolio. Okay, Antolio, Noel, a question or comment?
Yes, I have a question about Tuck.
Sorry, what was that?
I have a question on current balance. How do you pronounce the word? Balance, unbalance.
Okay, I'm having a little trouble understanding. You've got a, maybe just a little too much high background noise. It's just kind of making it understand. It's making it difficult for me to understand what you're saying. But okay, I got that you have a question. Well, we'll get to you. Alrighty. Any other November stations? Please call K2BAR.
And at 2K, Jim, no question.
W2AKR, repeater.
And at 2K, acknowledged. Any other stations? November call, please call K2BAR.
And J1W, Dave, no question.
K2IBN, Gary, no question.
Okay. Let's take them one at a time. I have Dave and J1W, and some station's name is Gary. You're very noisy, I missed your call. Could you try that again, please?
K2IBN, no question.
Okay, Gary, very good. KC2 India Bravo November, is that correct?
India Victor November.
Yankee Victor November?
So, Victor November.
I'm sorry. India Victor November. Okay, very good. Okay, when I'm asking for November stations, I'm usually asking for it at the beginning of the prefix, but no problem, Gary. Welcome aboard. We got you covered. Any other stations with the call signs beginning in with November, please call K2BAR.
M3CRT, maybe with a mini topic, if I'm in a good mood.
Gee. Welcome back, Charlie, M3CRT. Very good with your mini topic. We'll take that under advisement. Any other stations with a November call, please call K2BAR.
6T, John, no questions.
AB2XT, John, I think it's the first time you checked in without a question. Very good.
I think.
Oh, very good. Any other Alpha stations, please call KTVAR. K Whiskey Station, please call KTVAR.
Whiskey India 2 Whiskey, no questions, Steve.
Okay, very good, Steve. I have a question for you, actually, which we'll hold in advance, but I'm going to put you down for a question. I'll actually give you the question. It has to do with the availability of some of the low Earth orbit FM satellites. What might be available this weekend? But anyway, any other Whiskey stations, please call KTVAR. Okay, Kilo Station, any Kilo Station, please call KTVAR. KC2QYM, boy, Peter, you're really, really noisy. I got that you checked in, but boy, do you have a question or a comment? I didn't even copy Peter that time. Okay, Peter, we're going to try to get back to you in a little bit. I'll drag my heels in a little bit and give you another opportunity. Any other Kilo stations, please call KTVAR.
K2ZO, no question.
Good evening, Jim. K2ZO, KTVAR. Any other stations in Kilo, please call KTVAR.
2AMI, Tony.
BDU, Helmut, and I have a question.
Okay, I have two stations, Tony, K2AMI, good evening to you, and KA2, I think it's K2BU, Helmut, good evening to you too, sir, and you did have a question, is that right, Helmut?
Thanks.
Okay, so noted, no problem. Alrighty, any other stations, please call K2BAR, any at all.
KC2QYM, a question about basic ground.
Okay, basic ground. All right, very good. Good to see you. Peter, your station. Your signal is much better now. All right, any other stations wishing to check in? Please call KTVAR.
K2DSL, David, no question.
KTVAR, KTVAR. Any other stations, please call KTVAR. Okay, well, we have several things. Noel has a question. Charlie has a mini topic. I have a question for Steve, which I'm going to hint at. Peter with a basic question about basic grounds, and Helmut with a question. So I think we're going to take those in, at least at this point, to sort of Helmut. So actually, take Noel's question first, Helmut's question second. Then we'll go to Peter's question. We'll do it in that order for now. See how that works. Alrighty, Noel, your question, sir. Just call. Yeah, your question.
First, tell me how to pronounce correctly the word for a balanced to unbalanced transformer.
I've always said Balin, but I've heard Balin as well.
Okay. Well, there's two kinds, voltage and current. Voltage is actually the transformer. So we have a primary and secondary winding. The current type is basically a ferrite choke. I have 20 feet that Mr. Jackson's client kindly gave me, so I can use it on one antenna. The other antenna, I put together based on the advice I got at Hittite. They said as many as you can fit. Well, each of the chokes are an inch long. I got 24 on it. When I finished this thing, I realized it's a weapon that falls from the sky and is going to smack somebody's noggin. So the question is, to make an effective balance for the G5RV, how many one-inch ferrites would be recommended as a minimum and a maximum?
seen anything from about 8 inches to about a foot and a half. I'm going to go to our resident ballon expert. K2ZO. K2VAR.
Okay, this is K2ZO. Well, if you take a look at the ballons that I made and used on field day, they were used at the lowest frequency of 80 meters, and they were about 20 small ferrites, small ones, which consisted of about 12 to 14 inches of length. So that's the way to do that. If you want to, of course, test it, there's always a way to set up a test and do it. But 24 is probably more than you really need.
Okay, very good. Noel?
So I cut it in half and used 12. Actually, I didn't realize until Mr. Jackson gave me what they were supposed to be. Those are little rings. What I got are monster ferrites, but I paid like 30 cents a piece for them, so what the heck, but I will use them. Thank you very much, K2BAR and 2OER.
Okay, anybody else would like to add to that?
I want to know how you test them, Jim.
You build two, okay? You go in and you convert to one and then back again.
Four.
Try to keep a double. Say again.
And what are you looking for? What's the test setup?
Okay, the real way to test, that way is the simple way to test them. The actual way to test them is to use a 50 ohm dummy load consisting of two 25 ohm resistors. You put it on a plate and or some kind of ground plane. You ground the input of the choke ballon. You ground the input, in other words, the shield on the input. Then you take that center tap of the two resistors to ground while you're measuring the SWR. If indeed it's okay and it's isolated, you won't see any change.
That sounds like a great kid night experiment.
Yeah, I've done it.
Okay, so let's make sure I have it right. You try it with and without the 50 ohm termination.
No, what you do is you put a 50 ohm termination with a center tap on it, so you can ground that. Now you've got the shield grounded to a plate or ground on the surface of your workbench, on the input of the ballon. If you ground the center tap of the two 25 ohm resistors that comprise the 50 ohm load, and you don't see any change in SWR, you're there.
I gotcha. Okay. Very good. So, it's taking two 25 ohm resistors in series, but across at the load, and you short one half of that out without noticing the SWR change, your balance working.
That's right, because what that tells you is that it's completely isolated from input to output.
Awesome. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Jim. Okay, and any comments about the appropriate pronunciation of the term ballon?
Nope, ballon is the proper pronunciation.
Yeah, what I found, I think it's a fair mistake for people to make. You know, we think of balance, unbalanced, hence we say ballon. It's really, it's not a word as much as it is a some form of a combination of parts of two other words. And as such, what you're left with grammatically is something that you would say balon because there's only well, you know, strictly correct as far as our
definitely inconsistent English language is, it would have two L's, and it would then say balance, but because only one L, people would often tend to say balance. And you can kind of tell when they work in the field when they're reading balance, or reading construction, they often would find it. So I think that's kind of the genesis of that. That has not happened to me in about 30 years. And it's when I was recently up on Berkshire, when they were using balance, the management was putting as balance because they weren't RX people. They were just, dealing with device, the combination of their systems they were working on. They didn't know any better, so it's very amusing. Alrighty. Well, I think we're good to go. You're all square? And you're all the LTCAM.
Question?
Question, go.
You.
No problem. And the question?
This is M3CRT. I have a question about the ferries that he's using. How long are they, and what is the diameter of the hole?
Good evening.
They're almost exactly 1 inch long. They're split. They have a 3/8 hull to make for the cable. They fit perfectly on the RT-58X and 2OEM.
Okay, thanks. M3CRT.
Okay, very good. All right, next topic. KA2BDU, Helmut, your question, sir. KA2BDU.
KA2BDU. When I operate my transceiver, a handheld, in my case, it is a submersible VX7R, I guess it's good for my submarine too. And I operate it at home, in a car, or let's say walking. When is it considered stationary, mobile, or portable? Over.
I think I'll eat this one. Well, it's not an easy one, but it's very amusing.
Okay.
If you are in your licensed location, such as it was back in the battle days, you were considered fixed at home. You could also now take that on the road to another fixed location, I suppose. And if you had, like, a country home, you could say that you're operating fixed there as well. If, however, you are mobile, like walking or in your vehicle, that would be considered mobile. I think that's fairly reasonable. You've got a bicycle or a boat, an airplane, whatever. Maritime mobile, aeronautical mobile, etc. I think that's probably reasonable. If you're in a vehicle and you're conducting your operation in a vehicle, whether or not you're rolling or not, pretty straightforward. And then finally, you could end up with this, what is this fixed business? Well, if you're not mobile and you're not in a permanent location, i.e. one where the antennas are kind of like screwed down to the wall, I suppose, in that sense, you could probably say you're fixed or portable, perhaps, not your home station. I guess that's the way I would phrase it. It's as portable. If you're in a station, it's could be taken apart, walked off with at the portable station. As a practical matter, you may encounter slight variations of the rules if you're in a contest. That's something to think about as well. So you don't want to get burned on that, but there'd be different contests on that, but different requirements and such things. But in general, I think that's probably a good guideline there. You're either fixed or you're mobile, and that's probably about it. In general
sense. KA2 portable, thank you.
Here's the best part. We don't have licensed station locations anymore. We have licensed email address, mailing addresses for contact purposes, but we don't actually have a licensed station. In fact, you're given an operator's license, not a station license now. So I think that's kind of a fundamental difference, too. In the old days, you had a two-part form where you had your fiction license and your operating license, and they were different. Anyway, but thanks for that help. It's a good question. Anyway, Peter, your question about basic station ground.
K2BAR, KC2QIM, good evening everyone again. Trying to figure out if I really have a true ground or not, and a lot of it has to do with the length or the distance between my shack and the cold water valve tap on the outside. I have a 12-gauge steel copper-plated wire that is attached to the back of my rig that goes out the window about 35 feet and with a bronze clip onto the cold water spigot outside next to into the house. And I noticed during the field day that there was a very long wire that went to a cold water spigot. I think it was from Jim's 80-meter station. And that must have been about 30 or 40 feet of wire. Am I actually getting an adequate ground, or am I actually resonating that wire off the ground connection, off the end of the rig, or any combination therein? I keep reading about, you know, grounds needing to be very close to the actual equipment and such, you know, and not more than 12 feet, things like that. And also the thickness of the wire has something to do with that as well. I just want to make sure I'm actually getting an adequate ground here. Back to you.
Well, anytime you have wire between your device and your earth ground, which you call water spigot, to the point where that enters the soil, actually the point below that actually, where the ground actually is established, you certainly have the opportunity to have a resonant ground element. That can be a problem. You saw one with on Jim's station, but it was, I guess, okay. It was something that didn't create any undue radiation or hot spots on the microphone. I don't think anybody complained about getting their lip bit when they touched the microphone with their lip during RF peak, so that's probably a good thing. But in general, shorter is better. But I have a similar problem here. I use my tower, and I don't just use the tower to ground, but I also shut the whole mess to ground, and then to a set of ground rods outside the house. So, but my ham shack's on the third floor of my home, so. It can be interesting sometimes trying to keep the RF out. So I'm always working on that a little bit, to improve things a little bit by a little bit. Anybody want to make a comment about this before I ask Peter if he has any further comments?
NS2K.
NS2K, go ahead.
No, I'm sure Jim has a comment too, but I would think of that wire more as an electrical safety ground than for RF purposes. There was, it's a fairly long, fairly random piece of wire that hopefully has no RF significance. Put it that way. Mostly just want to not get electrocuted AC-wise. What he was driving was a balanced antenna for all intents and purposes, so it's not working against a ground-type counterpoise, so having a good RF ground in that case is not important. With other kinds of antennas, of course, it is very important, and it depends on what you're trying to do. Anyway, back to that NS2K.
Anybody else?
Yeah, okay, choose that up.
Hey, Jim.
Okay, this is K2ZO. The antenna that we were using on field day was a balanced antenna. and our ground was really an electrical ground. However, if you're using an unbalanced antenna like a long wire, now you have to worry about that length of wire. That's about the only thing I can say. And it may be adequate, it may not be. You'll very soon find out with RF in a shack.
Jim, I missed that. Can you direct the net for a moment?
Well, of course, as most of you know, I don't use a balanced antenna. I have a long wire. I have a counterpoise off the tuner that goes to another part of my heating system radiator, and then of course I have this other wire that's connected to the rig. So far I haven't had too many RF issues or hot spots or burns or anything like that. So I guess since I employed this combination of wires and ground, etc., even though it's lengthy, it hasn't been too bad. At least I don't feel it's been too bad. But I guess the other way to go for it is, and I'm wondering what people think about this MFJ artificial ground, if that has any value in a situation that I'm in, which is on the third floor, and sort of very far from a real ground location.
Peter, my comments on that are, just want to make sure I have it here, that the artificial ground, all the artificial ground does is resonate the wire to the frequency. It's an antenna tuner with a current meter in it, okay? That's all it is, okay? You can duplicate that without any problem. Save your money. And if you do have a problem, put yourself a counterpoise wire, quarter wavelength long, at the frequency you're having problems coming off your tuner. Stick it out the window, lay it alongside of the house, and that'll take care of the problem. In reality, for a home station, you really shouldn't be using long wires. You should have a balanced antenna. It's not a big deal to come up with something like that, even though it may not be resonant. A balanced antenna will save you a lot of grief.
Good point, and I'm still thinking about how I would erect something like that based upon the kinds of trees and other structures I have. But thank you very much for everybody's advice, Jim and Jim, and we're back to net. K2BAR, KC2QYM.
Okay, I think Gordon got on the phone there, so we'll see if anybody else out there with any other comments. Anybody with any more questions?
I'm sorry, I'm back.
Go ahead.
Yeah, WCRTTT. Thanks, Jim. I've been waiting for this call from my TV repair, warranty repair people. I very well may be getting a new widescreen television for free.
What?
They can't fix it. It's under warranty. It's not my problem. Replace it. That's my advice to anyone who buys a plasma television or any of these high-end televisions. Let's see. I hope I haven't. I missed a piece of this net. I really apologize. But yeah, I've only been waiting a month for this call. All right. So we got Peter's question about station ground squared away. Are we on to the next topic? That would be Charlie.
Is it my turn? Is that 3CRT?
It could be. It could be. Just why don't you get your thoughts together and collect your thoughts? I'm going to do a couple of commercials here. First of all, are there any stations wishing to check into the Bergen Amateur Radio Association TechNet? You need not be a member. We welcome your questions. Just call KTBAR when you call your name. Whether or not you have a question or a comment for the net.
W4DSA, Daniel, no questions tonight. Sorry about the late check-in.
Oh, Danny boy, we hear you calling. No problem, Daniel. Good to hear you. Anyway, any other stations wishing to check in, please call TBA up. Okie doke. All right, one other commercial announcement. This Sunday night is the annual Barra meeting. You can come to our Barra meeting. Brand new member. I think it's also election night, which is kind of cool. There's a slate of candidates that have been prepared by a nominations committee, and nominations are also available from the floor, which is very cool as well. And we hope to have a lively but fun meeting, because the topic of the evening is show and tell. So you need to think about what you might want to bring. This segment has had many interesting subjects, so it might be a wonderful idea, for instance, Noel, for you to bring your balance up, the short one, the long one, and maybe say a few words about that. That might be a useful thing. Helmet, you might want to see if your VX7R can have a live demonstration of maybe 18 inches of water for a minute or so and still work. We'd love to see that demonstration. Great, great.
I used to own a VX7R, by the way. I liked it. I hated the human factors, but I love the durability of the radio.
And any number of interesting things. I'll probably bring some variants of my orange box, as I've been talking about it on the net from time to time. And let's see. I think that covers it. So, we gather around 7 o'clock on Sunday evening at the Red Cross building in Ridgewood. And the meeting starts at 7:45. So we're usually done with most of the evening's affairs by about 9, maybe a hair later, so we'll just hang around and chat a bit, but fundamentally the things are usually buttoned up around 9. So it's very pleasant, a couple hours with your fellow amateur colleagues. Welcome you to join us. Any other comments about this before I move on to Charlie?
Late check-in.
W2JK. Tom, any questions or comments?
No, I just got here. No questions. Thank you.
No problem. Okay. Mr. Charlie, well, fresh back from his wonderful vacation and the AmSat symposium and God knows whatever else he was doing. So, Charlie, why don't you tell us about CRT, TBAR.
Well, that's not what I've actually prepared. I've been kind of burned out since I got back with work and everything. So I'm kind of tired. Does anybody have any questions for what happened at the AMSAT thing? Any myths or rumors that I might be able to talk about there? Steve got a nice, WITW got a nice little segment into the Barrett Bolton this month, so there's a little bit of information there. Does anybody have any questions before I go on with what else I'm thinking about right now? This is F3CRT.
W2AKR repeater.
Okay, I'll take that as a no, or everybody's too shy to ask questions. So here's what I was thinking about. I'm building my station here at home, and I'm putting up a tower. And I've got certain bands that I want to take care of. And mostly, this is for VHF stuff. So I could put up, you know, wires or whatever. I don't have problems with balance and RF going back down the coax, really, with some of that VHF stuff. And I don't have to bury any huge radials. I'll probably put up a dipole. But I'm thinking about station design and how complex it can be when you're dealing with a bunch of sets of coax and meters and power supplies and radios that you all want to get hooked up and working at the same time. And I just wanted to pose the question to the net. Does anybody have any comments on what they do for station design? Because I'm thinking of just starting with a white piece of paper and starting to draw. This is what I radios is what I want to do with it. How much of the different things do I need and to get set up with, and not be too overload in the brain department thinking about it. So does anybody have any comments?
W2J, good.
I thought you might, and I was hoping to hear from you, actually. And W2JK, Don, go ahead.
Okay, Charlie, this is W2JK. What do you want to have the ability to switch one antenna or another, connect via a multi-point, let's say coax switch, that you can switch your radio, which is just a multi-band, VHF, UHF, radio kind of a thing, where you can switch from a 2-meter beam to a 6-meter beam to the 440 beam, let's say, and then maybe also have another switch to a variable that would be for your FM mode. So you don't have to be constantly undoing changing coax connectors. It would be the same way on HF, where you might have a beam for the HF bands for 80, for 10, 15, and 20, such as a tri band, or another dipole, let's say, for 40 meters, and another wire, let's say, for 80 meters, or a trap dipole, let's say, for the WARC band. A lot of this, I said, why? But if you start, if you're getting into contesting at all, this is where the ability to change bands rapidly happens. And then the converse order, if you have several different radios, I have 2HF rigs here in this shack. Wait a minute. I have 2HF rigs here in this shack. I can switch from, I can switch to 3 different HF radios. I have a free position switch, and I have 3 different HF antennas. Plus, I also have a 6-meter antenna and a separate 2-meter antenna, which I'm using now, but those aren't switched. So that's a food for thought for him. So that's part of it. Back to that W2J.
Okay, and I have another question on that, on your layout there with all the switching. Do you have it documented at all? Do you have like a design paper or all your coaxes very carefully labeled so you can look at it and go, you know, I know exactly what's going on here, not what the heck is going on here, you know, which is this, and you're pointing at the wall and trying to trace coaxes as they go out the window.
You definitely should label the coax, Charlie. I mean, it's very easy. They all look alike, and they all got an RG58 or whatever you're using, and they all got a PL259 on them, and unless you know which is which, you can have a problem if you don't have the label.
Okay, yeah, I'm basically setting up a satellite ground station, but I want to continue to have the ability for 6 meters on a beam, horizontal, and at the top of that tower, at the top of the vertical mast, and put my dual band vertical up there. That will then come down into the shack and probably be with a diplexer. I believe that's the correct term. Maybe someone can correct me. There's a difference between a duplexer and a diplexer. It just split those two bands back out and say, this is a vertical on 2 meters, this is a vertical on 440, and then it allows me to switch all my networking to that. And then at the same time, I'm probably going to go with a right-hand circular pole station on 2 meters, 440 on my beam antennas, and not too long. I'm trying to keep it compact, but yeah, just the overall layout of getting all that up on the tower into the shack, properly lightning protected, on it, you know, with a single point ground. Not necessarily a single point ground, but an appropriately capable grounding system. It all sort of swirls in your head when you start to think of it all at once. So really what I got to do is sit down with like a piece of notepaper and just start to draw it and say, this is what I need. Start measuring for coax length. Probably buy a big spool of a 400 series coax, because I do like the big stuff, because I deal with higher frequencies. I think that's all I got for now. Let me drop it for a second.
Comment.
Go ahead with the comment.
You were talking about using a diplexer to split 440 and 2 meters, I think, on one piece of coax. If you're trying to work satellites, that might be problematic if you're running crossband. You're going to want two separate pieces of coax for sure. The other comment you made was about running right-hand circular antennas. I had some experience with that. I'm going to drop. The low Earth orbiting satellites are all right-hand polarized, except for VL52, which is left-hand. But ignoring VL52, I had a right circular polarized antenna up, and I was getting very, very deep fades on the order of 20 to 30 dB. And they shouldn't have been there, because there were good antennas that pointed correctly. What happens is those satellites change polarization during their orbit for a number of reasons. And I found that with circularly polarized antennas, you had to sit there with your finger on the switch to be able to switch from right to left when there was a fade. I found that very annoying. So I just went to linear antennas and of course the mandatory preamps, and the fades are not very deep at all. They're only about 3 dB. So for the LEOs, at least, I found the circularly polarized antennas to be a disadvantage, not an advantage.
So, I understand what you're saying, but can I get your opinion on what will I need a right, or will I need a circular polarization antenna for the high elliptical stuff that's coming down the road?
The answer is probably yes, and those satellites will maintain their polarization. So one thing you might do is get a circularly polarized antenna now with vertical and horizontal elements, but only use one set of the elements for now with the LEOs, and then see how things go. It's going to be a couple of years before we get EOs up anyway, so that would be my suggestion. And if you want to start out on the cheap, I suggest a couple of cheap Yagis, which is really all you need, and then you can put your money into coax and lightning protection and all the other things that you're going to want to add to your station, like 1.2 gigahertz, etc. So we can talk more about it offline, Charlie. That's my experience anyway. I have a circularly polarized 435 beam in the garage. If you want to have a play, we can set that up one day and I'll demonstrate it to you.
Okay, thanks, Steve. This is the end read here. I'm also then, you gave me the idea of why a circularly polarized antenna, but separate it out and do the vertical thing and do the horizontal thing. And I don't, you know, if I use a remote switch before the preamp, maybe put the preamp somewhere on the tower and put a remote switch before it, so I'm linear, I'm horizontal or vertical linear, and I can switch between it real quick and still have the preamp doing its thing close to the antenna, which is what's important in that situation. Other than that, I think I'm all out of ideas to talk about tonight, so I hope I maybe sparked a little bit of interest in considering our shack design. And if you're sitting on a pile of wires, you might want to look through it. And I know if you've got something that's working now, you don't necessarily want to rip it apart, but to take careful consideration of what you've got, how it's working, and maybe how you can make it better. So Any other comments before I close out my part? This is M3CRT.
W2TTT.
Go ahead, Captain Net Control.
Yeah, Q2BAR. Okay. Actually, I do have a couple of ideas. Number one, I've had to spend numerous years on a budget doing all sorts of crazy things to kind of, figure out where to spend my money. And, Steve mentioned a whole mess of good topics and gave you good suggestions on how to prioritize your antenna coax and your lightning protection kind of work. One of the things that I ended up having to do for the longest time was when coax came into the shack, in order to provide adequate lightning protection, if there's lightning anywhere in reasonable proximity of my station, my first objective is to disconnect all wires from the radio, including the microphone, by the way, the Morse code key, and the computer cable, power cable, everything you possibly think of, headsets, everything comes out, speakers, everything. That's number one. Number two, I pull plugs out of the wall, and number three, and probably most importantly, I would take my coaxes and put them into a ground strip. At one point, I used to have a set of coaxial connectors that were all grounded to the earth ground, and so when I wasn't
repeater, fine, I'll. Repeater, reset. Thank you.
Did I time out very long? 10 seconds, so just repeat your last 10 seconds.
Sorry about that. I probably was short on the mic in the first place. The last thing I would do is I'd just make sure that I had a ground bus for all my antenna connectors. I would basically unscrew my antennas from the radio equipment and screw them into this ground bus that was near where the stuff came into the shack, near where the earth ground was in the shack, okay?
I let it reset. That's what I was thinking about, is I have a basement window that's close to the bottom of the tower, but at the same time I don't want to run coaxes in through the house. I kind of want to preserve running them along the edge of the house and around and up to my second story window. So what I was thinking with the basement window is fold the copper plate in there, have my coax come down off the tower, and whatever else I've got coming down off the tower pass through the bulkhead, which is appropriately grounded, and pass through different polyphaser lightning protection devices, and then have jumpers that jump over to a second copper plate as it exits the house again. And I know this is getting connector intensive, but it's just the way I was thinking of it. And then have the coax proceed along the ground around the corner and then come up to my second story here, rather than trying to route anything through the house. Did that sound specifically like a good idea or a bad idea? And, pending a lightning storm, I would go downstairs and disconnect all the jumpers. I don't know if that would be adequate, but it would still, my coaxes would be then connected through a polyphaser to ground if it should choose to strike.
Yeah, in most cases I would say, oh my God, Charlie, what are you doing? In your case, your tower is not very tall. You're talking about maybe, at the worst case, 50 feet to a peak point. At the absolute most, probably 30 odd in a lot of cases. So I think that'll work very well. The other thing that approach gives you the option of doing is putting switchable preamps and other goodies in the basement that you need not have in your shack. High power amplifiers for that matter. All sorts of other good things you could also embed on the other side of that bulkhead. They can, by the way, be on the same plate. You don't need to have two separate plates. In fact, I would advise against that. I would just make sure it's one big plate with lots of connectors. If you're going to go why I would generally advise against it, is because you don't have access to, shall we say, quickly isolating your antennas from the shack itself. And you don't need a lot, but the ingress panel in your ham shack area, you know, whatever that bulkhead is, should have some way to short to ground all that stuff, period. I like the idea of the polyphasers where you're thinking about putting them. There's no reason why you couldn't put more as well where the shack ingress is as well. But I'm thinking that you may not want to have connectors on where the shack bulkhead is, just basically pass the coax straight through. But I would still have some way to loop them back off the radios and onto a grounded panel that, you know, even has a just a DC ground to earth right there, just for lightning protection should you neglect to take care of the other business in the basement. Well, I don't have plans for those things down there. I just want to protect your gear in the shack. That's the strategy I use. What else can I provide you with that might be interesting? I guess that's about it for now. I have other thoughts on the shack design. Let me just get your point on this much before I go on to internals of the shack.
Yeah, I'm still going to ground that plate where the coax is right now enter into my shack upstairs here. But I consider a couple things is I might want to move my shack downstairs, depending on my ability to control water in the basement, which I'm going to work on this winter. Being upstairs, I can ground that plate. I can put a piece of copper on the back of it or whatever I have to do. And then run a heavy wire down to maybe a ground rod at the base underneath the window. Connect that ground rod to the ground rod by the base of the antenna, which will also be connected to ingress egress plate at the in the basement. So with all that considered, I'm able to, if I have a couple radios in the basement, I can operate radios at the basement or from the basement, or set up a data center, a ham data center with my Flex Radio 5000. Not that I have one yet, but I've been looking at it, and I should not go to that website because it's tempting. Just APRS here, whatever else I want to run down there, and I could, pursue other means to run my shack from remotely. So that's just another line that I was thinking. And I have a question for Steve and WITW. Would it be okay or sub quality-wise to put a preamp, let's say 40 feet from where the antenna is?
My personal opinion is no, because every half a dB of loss in the coax just adds to the noise figure, and you're starting with weak signal, so you should mount it on the antenna if possible. So that's my take.
That's another thing I was thinking of. If I just used a pretty good coax for the two or three important bands, the 2 meter satellite, the 432, 435, and like 1.2, and I'm going to do 2.4 separately with a down converter right on the tower. I think I might be able to get away a little bit better with a lower loss, a heliax or something like that, something heavy duty going up there.
Well, let me see about it. If you put preamps up at the antenna, the coax coming down from a receive standpoint really doesn't matter because the preamp has more than enough gain to overcome any coax loss. You can run RG58 down if you want. There'll be plenty of receive signal.
where you lose out if you run RG58, of course, is some of your transmit power is going to get sopped up. But if you put the preamps at the antenna, you can use plain ordinary coax without getting fancy, and you lose a little bit of power going up, but your radios have more than enough power for satellite work. And, you know, I keep mine throttled back to 5 or 10 watts most of the time. So the coax loss for transmit really doesn't matter for satellite work. So my suggestion is put good preamps up at the tower and put your money there rather than buying expensive heliacs and or even just dealing with surplus hardline, which is a little unwieldy to work with. Gordon might take exception to that, but I like to keep it simple and easy. And you put the preamps at the antenna, you're going to hear everything. So that's my two cents.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for that info. I'll ponder over it. I'll probably end up doing it that way. I kind of pictured it that way. I didn't really think about putting the preamps at the base of the tower, other than to be able to switch. There's no reason why I couldn't do something with a switching of the coax up at the top of the tower with a remote switch if I wanted to switch between vertical and horizontal. It's just another thing to think at. I think that's it for tonight. It's getting close to 10 o'clock. I don't know if anybody else has anything to talk about. This is Dentry CRT. Back to the net.
Okay, a little bit more.
Okay. If you can keep the losses in the neighborhood of a half a dB or so, then I think that it's well worth putting your preamp downstairs rather than the climb tower. I understand the grief of not being able to hear a signal. That's painful. But if you can keep it under a half a dB or so, I think that, you know, you're fantastic. You always figure some of these front ends is absolutely phenomenally, you know, pitifully small. It's really amazing. And I think it's a point, either way. And yeah, Steve, I do take exception. to the hardline issue. I've even run LDF 450 and used it in a flexible mode. It's kind of a pain in the neck to do, but it can be done. Spin enough around your rotator and enough loops, and it doesn't flex too badly. It's all right. Anyway, I use a lot of LMR 400. Now I'm starting to use LMR 600. In fact, I have to come up with a couple of connectors. Anybody have LMR 600 connectors? I need two. Anyway, what else? Anybody else? Can you drop it? In-station design. I think there's something to be said about taking some time to figure out how to position yourself in front of the equipment you're going to use and use most often in a comfortable fashion. That could be everything from pitching up your radios, bringing your radios off your desktop, maybe even elevating your desktop or lowering it depending on your physical stature, adjusting your chair, putting your monitor in the right place, all those things. A place for your mouse, a place for your foot switch if you use one. Your desk might be used one. Your paddles or your Morse code key if you have a straight key. All these things need to be thought through. Further complicating it, touching on the subject, will be how to switch one headset among two or more radios or one microphone.